Welcome to the GenCast Network. Created every Thursday, GenCasts feature the latest biotech news of the week, plus compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. In this week's GenCast, Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling talks with Dr. Anthony S. Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, on emerging infectious diseases around the globe.
Dr. Anthony Fauci is the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. He oversees an extensive research portfolio of basic and applied research to prevent, diagnose, and treat infectious diseases such as HIV/AIDS and other sexually transmitted infections, influenza, tuberculosis, malaria, and illness from potential agents of bioterrorism. NIAID also supports research on transplantation and immune-related diseases, including autoimmune disorders, asthma, and allergies. Dr. Fauci and his team have made many contributions to basic and clinical research on the pathogenesis and treatment of immune-mediated diseases. They have been particularly successful in helping us understand how the AIDS virus destroys the body's defenses, leading to its susceptibility to deadly infections. Dr. Fauci, why are we seeing the sudden appearance of strange and often deadly diseases like AIDS, SARS, bird flu, and Ebola?
You know, I think if you look at the big picture of how diseases emerge and reemerge, I don't think there is a substantial increase in the number of new and emerging diseases. There could be because of one of the factors that are involved in facilitating the emergence of new disease, and that is when the human species tends to perturb the environment, things like getting into the rainforest and exploring areas that where animals that might be harboring diseases that can jump species are not generally coming into contact with man. But when you do things like probe into the wilderness, tearing down the rainforest, getting involved in areas for commercial or other reasons, that gives the microbes the opportunity to jump species, because about 70% or so of the new emerging microbes are zoonotic, namely they're fundamentally in animals and they jump species. Also, when you have things like the economic and social conditions as we see in Southeast Asia, where you have ducks and chickens being raised literally in cohabitation with humans, the way we've seen in some of the free-ranging farms agricultural facilities in some of the Southeast Asian country, putting the human species into contact. So I think in general we've always seen emerging and re-emerging infections. We're probably better at detecting them now in the 21st century than we were a couple of hundred years ago. But I think you add on to that the fact that the conditions likely have changed somewhat to favor the emergence of new emerging and re-emerging infections.
I see. Now, picking up on that note of detecting, I understand that you and your colleagues have classified emerging infectious diseases into three categories. Can you tell us what these categories are along with the resultant implications for
Sure.
both diagnosis and treatment?
Sure. We generally look upon it. There were fundamentally two major categories, and one is a truly emerging disease, namely a disease which we are virtually certain that civilization, humanity, humankind has never experienced before. That's one, for example, like HIV/AIDS or SARS or Nipah virus. When you're talking about re-emerging infections, you're talking about infections that we have experienced as a species, but only they are now confronting us either in a different form or a different geographic location. In the United States, a classic example of that is West Nile fever, because the West Nile virus has been around for centuries in Africa and in the Middle East, and only because some sort of accident of transportation of some sort, the virus came to the Western Hemisphere and infected people, and now it has essentially established itself in the United States. So that's a true re-emerging infection. The influenza infections that change a bit each year, necessitating the updating of a vaccine, is a re-emerging infection. Yet a pandemic flu that's a brand new infection is generally referred to as truly an emerging new infection. And there are many, many examples of each of these, either truly newly emerging or re-emerging. The third category that we've discussed that has really come about to our realization and our awareness only recently, and those are the deliberately emerging diseases, namely where you have an infection that either would not have the opportunity to infect man or, in fact, maybe has even been eradicated, like smallpox, which because of the deliberate release of these microbes, you can have a situation equivalent to the emergence of a new infection, unfortunately not nature emerging it, but some man or some state deliberately emerging it. So that's how I have been classifying these infections into three major categories: emerging, re-emerging, and deliberately emerging.
Okay, now if you take away the deliberately, caused infection, the other two, the emerging and re-emerging, how big a problem are these in terms of morbidity, mortality, and cost to the regions around the globe?
Well, they're enormous. I think if you just look at HIV/AIDS in and of itself as the prototype as of the truly emerging new infection, we know that there have been over 60 million people infected with HIV worldwide. Currently, there are about 40 million plus who are living with HIV. There have been about 23 to 25 million people who have died from HIV already. So if you're talking about global impact, it's most extraordinary. You talk about a re-emerging infection like the re-emergence of malaria in certain regions, particularly drug-resistant malaria. This is something that when mosquitoes were suppressed to a reasonable degree years ago by insecticides, that we had a decline and then now a reemergence only, unfortunately, in many in a drug-resistant form. If you look at the burden of malaria, you're talking about well over 1 to 2 million deaths per year of malaria. The same holds true for tuberculosis, which has reemerged in many cases in a drug-resistant form, up to 2.5 million people a year. So the morbidity and mortality associated with emerging and reemerging infectious diseases is most extraordinary.
Right. Now, I think one of the advantages of living in today's age is of biotech. And we'd like to know is what kind of biotech tools and therapies are being used to address the diagnosis and treatment of emerging infectious diseases, and how are these specifically being employed both in the research lab and at the bedside?
Well, I think the technology of the 21st century and of the 20th century that we have just ended and gone into the 21st century have really, I think, transformed our ability to deal with these infections. Microbes have this extraordinary evolutionary capability of emerging, re-emerging, and adapting themselves to whatever it is that we do to eliminate them. The human species doesn't have that evolutionary capacity because we don't replicate every few minutes or seconds the way microbes do. So we have to rely on our wits, as it were, the technology that we develop. And among those technologies are much more rapid and specific diagnoses is very, very important. Our ability, for example, to within a period of days to a week to sequence the up to that point unknown SARS coronavirus and allow us to have in our hand a culprit that 50, 100 years ago may have taken decades for us to identify. It was identified literally in days. So the technology of sequencing microbes and with that sequencing to identifying targets for therapy, targets for drugs, and targets for diagnostics. So I think right now when you're talking about what technology has done, it has really put us on almost a level playing field with the emergence of these microbes so that we can utilize this important technology in everything from developing a new vaccine or screening for existing drugs or targeting new drugs as well as rapid diagnostics.
Okay, so my final question would be, with all these advances, do you still think there are some improvements that can be made not only in these tools but the therapies that will enable scientists and physicians to better deal with this problem of global infectious disease? And what do you think those improvements need to be?
Well, whenever I discuss in a public forum or even and talking privately about this issue that is so important to the work that my institute does, namely emerging and re-emerging infections, I refer to it as the perpetual challenge. And I think that terminology really answers your question. The perpetual challenge means that we can never rest on our laurels. We always need to improve our technologies. We always need to improve our capabilities of dealing with emerging and re-emerging infections and apply the most up-to-date basic scientific advances to apply it in a translational way to allow the technologies to benefit us. So I would think that forever we will be needing to improve it because the microbes will continue to fine-tune their ability to emerge and re-emerge, and the only way we can keep up with them is to do the same thing with our technologies.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, be sure to visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus saying thanks for joining us, and be sure to tune in next Thursday.